Welcome to another episode of Creator Talks. I'm your host, Christopher Calloway. My guest this week is artist Chris Mooneyham. He is the artist on Planet of the Apes, Ursus. That is being published by Boom Studios. It is a miniseries being written by David F. Walker. And Chris is also the artist on Five Ghosts, which is published through Image Comics and is written by Frank Barbieri. He was also a guest on my show earlier last year. In this interview right here is Chris Mooneyham's first ever audio podcast interview. This is a world premiere. He decided to take the plunge and start right here. And here's the odd thing. I got to thinking about this and I had another guest who this was their first podcast ever in English, and that was Victor Santos. And the connection, both Chris Mooneyham and Victor Santos have both done art on books written by Frank Barbieri. So see, there's the common denominator. It's Frank. And so Chris will let me know what information he has on when Five Ghosts will be returning with him and Frank on the book. But first, we're going to talk about his work on Planet of the Apes Ursus and also the Planet of the Apes franchise. Chris is a big Planet of the Apes fan, and we're going to talk about the films of the late 60s and early 70s, the television series that ran for a brief period of time, the 2001 reboot by Tim Burton, and the prequels that have come out this decade, and of course, my rest and relaxation questions. So sit back, relax, and enjoy my conversation with Chris Mooneyham, here now on Creator Talks. Chris, welcome to Creator Talks.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I hope you're feeling much better. It's been a horrible winter for colds and flus. I swear I've had a cold since the holidays. It just keeps hanging on. It's so annoying. So how are you feeling now? How are you making out? Because I know you had a tough COVID there for a while.
Yeah. I mean, I was pretty much in the same boat as you. Sometime around New Year's, I guess, is when it hit me. I'm better. But I still got that lingering cough, a little bit of an earache.
I used to have the worst earaches as a kid.
I never did, and my first ear infection was as an adult. And I was like, well, what the hell? What's going on here?
Well, when I got them, they were so bad. And back in the day, I don't think they do this anymore, but my parents would have to heat up medicine on a spoon and then get it in a dropper and put it in my ear. That felt better, but eventually it just didn't work, so they had to put tubes in my ears to drain them.
Really?
Actually, my son had them too, and back then they give me the gas and knock me out, put them in. It was a whole procedure. Now, taking them out was easy, but I'll tell you, as soon as I did it, I was fine. I mean, once they were in, solved the problem. Then they took them out after a couple of years. Yeah. And apparently, I've passed that along to my son. So he dealt with it too. But you know, what really stinks for you, when you get a comic work assignment, no matter what, that deadline's there, you have to get it done. So, you know, if you don't, then the book loses momentum. And then there's a problem. So have you ever needed a fill-in or replacement artist for a series, not due to a planned hiatus for yourself, but due to an illness or a personal matter that was just beyond your control?
Personal matter? Nah, not really. I'd say I've had editors ask if I needed it, but I'm very stubborn. And no matter how late I get, and usually I get late because of my own laziness or whatever, you know, I refuse to get somebody to help me out or fill in. I don't like that. I don't like doing that. I'd rather it be late than somebody else take over.
I appreciate that. You know, look at the big picture. What's the finished product, the whole run going to look like, rather than having it all chopped up with fill-ins?
Exactly. There's something that's like, this is my work. I want it to be my work. I don't want it to be anybody else's work. I've only had an inker one other time. He was talented. He did his job well. But at the end of the day, I can't be objective. You know, this is my work that he's inking over. And he's not necessarily doing it the way I would do it. So how can I be 100% happy with it?
Yeah, well, more nowadays, you know, pencilers are inking their own stuff. You're inking your own stuff on Ursus, Planet of the Apes. You know, going back to, I know you worked on Five Ghosts. That's when I first saw your work. And Gary Brown, you know Gary Brown, he did an issue. Now, it wasn't a fill-in so much. It was a planned part of the arc that he actually did the art. Brilliant choice.
Yeah, we were very happy. I mean, Gary and I's relationship goes back, just over 10 years now. We went to the Cuber School together. While we didn't really care for each other at first, we eventually became very, very good friends. It was just two big personalities. Didn't quite click at first. But anytime I get a chance to help him out, I will. I mean, Lord knows he's done the same for me on countless occasions. In my opinion, I still owe him so many jobs. He's the only one I would have felt comfortable. If we were to have somebody take over for me permanently, he would be probably the only person I'd feel comfortable doing that with.
And the styles are complementary. I mean, they're similar in a way, not exactly the same, but they fit well. It's not a radical shift in style if he were to fill in or take over. Not that I'm wishing that by any stretch, but it would be a good choice. What was it like going to the Kubert School with Gary?
It was rough, but it was great. I often think of it as the best decision I ever made in my life was going there. This was back in 2007, I think, was our first year. We graduated in 2010, and it's 3 years of constant drawing, and that takes, I don't think people realize how much that actually takes out of you. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work, and I'm not saying people can't make it in this career without some form of schooling, because a lot of people have, you know, but I'd say what this does is it teaches you in 3 years what it would normally take you 10 years to learn on your own. And, oh, baby, do you feel it? By the end of that third year, you feel it. A lot of good times. That was, like, the last time I made any permanent friends. You know, as an adult, it's harder to make friends. Gary's one of those lifelong friends.
And when you were there, Joe was still there, so you actually worked directly with Joe Kubert?
Yeah, he was the narrative art teacher for the third and final year. And I think he passed away. What year did he pass away? 2012?
I think you're right. I think it was around 2012.
We were one of the last classes to have him. Joe Kubert is God, in my opinion.
Any memories of Joe that you can share? Anything that he said to you or imparted upon you that you still remember today?
Yeah, actually, my biggest memory of Joe, and greatest memory and fondest memory of Joe, is we had to do a 5-page assignment that he gave us. And, well, let me just paint the picture. I'm a late guy. I take way too much time on things, or I'm lazy and have to scramble to get things done. I've been like this my whole life, and it translated through school, too. And I remember going in to show him some roughs after school one day. And I was sitting in his office, and he was going over this stuff with me. And I was showing him where I was at in the finished process. And Joe was a super nice guy, but he was very gruff. But he looks at one of my pages, the splash page. He just gets mad. He gets mad. Like, he's like, God damn it, you see? This is what I'm talking about. And he smacks my knee. He's like, you're too good to be this late. You're never going to get a job if you're this late. And I don't know. And on the one hand, he was yelling at me, but on the other hand, that was one of the greatest compliments I ever got, and it helped me a lot in my confidence as far as going forward in this career.
Well, looking back now, how did your art change from when you walked in the door and then you walked out when you graduated?
Oh God, I was trash. I was trash. Everybody's trash when they go in. And hopefully, you know, in that 3 years with the constant drawing, you get a little bit better. I would say that is what happened for me. I would say between my second and third year, things finally started to make sense to me. I was able to find something that stylistically that I was comfortable with, I guess. I don't know. I haven't looked at my first year stuff in a long time. I kind of dread doing that. But from what I remember, it was not good. It was not good at all. And even the stuff in my last year compared to now is not good. I mean, you're always learning. You're always getting better.
Well, if you are, that should be the case, that you look back and go, oh, I'm not satisfied with that.
Exactly. I'm a believer in if you're satisfied with your work, that you might as well quit. You shouldn't ever be satisfied with your work. You should always be trying to get better. You're never going to know everything and be able to do everything, but you should at least strive for it. That's my advice to everybody. If you're happy with yourself, quit.
Now, that was an intensive 3 years. So I'm just curious, how long was your day?
I think classes started at about 8 or 8:30, and we went until about 2:30 or 2:45, I think. And there were only two classes a day. We'd have that one class a week, two classes a day. So for 3 hours or so, 3.5 hours, you were sitting there working on whatever project that class had you working on. And then you would go home, and you'd be working through the night, too. It was about 10, 12-hour days, at least. There's a lot of drawing. From what I hear, that's changed since Joe passed. I know that Adam and Andy run things a little differently now. I don't know any specifics beyond that, but I know that it's not the same as when I was there. I mean, we're talking almost 10 years ago.
Well, with those high-pressure demands, how'd you let off steam?
Every once in a while, we'd all get together, have a party, go to a movie. You know, as loath as I am to call it a college, that's college for most of the people there. So we treated it as much like a college as we could. I mean, it's not like there were any strict rules against, you know, going out and drinking if you were of age, you know, and having a good time. So, I mean, we pretty much did it the same way anybody else in a similar college experience would do it, only we were a lot more broke than most. So we had to find cheap ways to do it, but we did it.
Well, now you're working on Ursus, Planet of the Apes, and you're getting caught up on that. So I'm sure your editors, you know, Daphne and Gavin, are trying to keep the book on time. But hey, take your time. Don't rush on my account, because I like the continuity, the look of the book. I want it to stay the way it is. You know, you pack a lot of detail into each issue.
I get that a lot. I feel like it's not as much as people think it is. I don't know. Maybe I'm pulling the wool over everybody's eyes. My biggest goal is to do as little work as possible. I mean, the whole point is just to get the story across with as little drawing as you can do. I think Alex Toth was a big proponent of that. I don't see a whole lot of detail in my stuff. I mean, I guess it's there.
Maybe it's just my impression, because it seemed like there's a lot more detail in the artwork and a lot more in each page compared to Five Ghosts. It was a fast read for me reading Five Ghosts. Maybe because I was just excited to get through it, but it was a fast read. This was a lot different.
I think a lot of that has to do with the writing style, too. I mean, Five Ghosts is action-packed. A lot of times when I was working on that, Frank Barbieri would have a whole thing written out in dialogue and all this stuff, and then he'd just let me go at it. And if he felt that I told the story in the drawings themselves, he would take out pages of dialogue because he felt that the storytelling was already there. With Ursus, it's a lot more character-driven. I mean, if you go back and look at that first issue, I don't know if the second issue's even come out yet, but if you look at that first issue, not a lot happens, but it feels like there's a lot because it's a lot of exposition and character development, and I don't know. I think the writing is what's keeping you there. It's definitely not my drawing.
I have to agree with you that the story's great. I mean, David F. Walker, and fans know him from Power Man, Iron Fist, Shaft, through Dynamite, and it's one of the best, and there's a lot of great ones through Boom, a lot of great Planet of the Apes adaptations, stories through Boom, not even adaptations, but continuing on the story or digging a little deeper. And in this one, readers gain insight into Ursus's motivations and some context about his character, and we met him the first time in the movies, and that being Beneath the Planet of the Apes. But this miniseries is running parallel to the events in the first movie, and we're seeing everything from the perspective of Ursus. So with this book, are you having discussions with David about the direction and details of the series? And I'm asking you this because you're a Planet of the Apes fan. So do you have a significant amount of input into the story's development?
I mean, the story's pretty much there already. David and the guys at Boom have pretty much worked everything out. As far as storytelling, they let me play around with whatever I want. For the most part, they're really, really good editors over there. And David is really easy to work with, too. I mean, it helps that he's a fantastic writer. I remember when they sent the first script to me, and I read it. It was one of the first times. And, you know, maybe the fact that they're movies, too, helped a bit. But I could see everything. And it's rare that when I read a script, I see everything. Upon the first reading, at least. Usually I have to work things out, you know, on paper to make things read for me. But with David, I felt it. It felt like I was watching the movie or one of the movies. I really didn't think that I needed to add anything. And then once I started actually working on it, he got in touch with me and we started talking about the way we work. You know, this is kind of how it goes with every project, and I assume every creative team. You want to get a feel for each other. So you ask each other what works best for you, what don't you like, and all that. And he's very, very giving. If I ask him and the editorial team to let me figure something out, or if I suggest a different way to do something, they are very much on board with hearing me out. And if they agree, they'll let me go with it. I mean, it's a true collaboration. That's what comics should be. You know, unless you're doing it all yourself, that's what it should be. It's great. It's great working with these people.
Well, I want to give you a moment to share your impression of the rest of the creative team, often the unsung heroes who need to be sung. You have a colorist, Jason Wordy. Did you select Jason? Was that something that Boom worked out for you?
Boom chose Jason. And, I mean, that was absolutely fine with me. After I saw the pages that he was bringing or he was putting in, I was absolutely fine with it. I use a lot of black in my art. Like, I try to make it color proof. And a lot of colorists don't know, especially these days, don't really know how to deal with that. I think a lot of them tend to overdo it. They over-render. And Jason seems to be one of those colorists that can adjust his style to whatever artist he's working with. And I've got a classic style, and he matched it. I was very happy with Jason as colorist on this. He's turned it into an old looking book. Like, this feels, if you go back and look at it, it feels like this was made when the movies were coming out, just based on my artwork and the colors he's choosing. I think in some of the other trades, maybe I'm mistaken. I don't have any of them right in front of me here, but I know that in ours there's a lot of red on Ursus, and I don't recall seeing that in any of the other gorilla soldier apes in the other trades. And I went back and looked at some of the old stuff, like the Charlton, right? Is that Charlton?
You know, I don't know if Charlton did Planet of the Books. They may have. I know Marvel did.
Yeah, I know Marvel did too. I think maybe they were reprints or something. I don't know. I know that the rights have been thrown about for many, many years until Boom finally got them. But if you go back and look, there's a lot of, he's using a lot of the similar color palettes that they did back then. And I think it really, really fits for this book. And I rarely have any notes for him. Usually, if they get me pages, I look at them and don't have to look at them again. And don't have to send notes. And that is great. I love not having to give notes. So Jason nailed it.
About the franchise itself, Planet of the Apes franchise, you're a fan of it. Your first exposure to the movies must have been a shock because it's so different from anything else. A little bit of sci-fi, set in a post-apocalyptic world, a little bit of social commentary. Do you remember what was the first Planet of the Apes film that you saw? When was it and where was it?
I think the first one I saw was the first one. See, my memory's a little hazy. There are a couple of different times that I remember watching these movies, but one of the biggest ones, when I was a kid, Sci-Fi Channel was relatively new, and they were having an Apes marathon, and I remember, instead of doing my homework, or telling my dad I did my homework so I could watch these movies with him, and we just spent the weekend watching all of them, and it was lasting impression. I don't know if that was the first time I saw them or not, but it was the first time I saw all of them. I specifically remember Conquest in that weekend. It was a lasting impression. I've liked apes ever since.
I think the first one I saw was the first one, and I think it was on network television at the time, and it had the biggest impression. And it's a little piece of trivia I found out. Edward G. Robinson did a screen test for that. They put him in the makeup back in like 66. He didn't like the makeup, so he just didn't do it, but it helped get the film off the ground because he had worked with Charlton Heston in The Ten Commandments. I think having his name attached to it and Heston's probably helped it get developed. They tested him as Dr. Zaius.
I can imagine. I mean, we're talking about a time when prosthetics like that hadn't been done yet. What actor from that era would have liked to sit there for hours upon hours?
Yeah, it's like Buddy Ebsen almost played the Tin Man and didn't like the makeup. In fact, he was allergic to it.
Yeah.
Remember that? You've heard that. Probably, yeah, the aluminum dust, it like really messed him up. They suffer for their art. But every time I think about Dr. Zaius now, and this is just, it just struck me, and this is such a bizarre little thing, but I always think of that episode of The Simpsons. Bart Goes to the Musical, Stop the Planet of the Apes, I Want to Get Off, starring Troy McClure, Phil Hartman.
and they
break into song, Dr. Zaius, sung to the 80s hit Rock Me Amadeus.
Help, the human's about to escape.
Get your paws off me, you dirty ape.
He can talk.
He can talk, 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 he can talk.
I can sing.
Ooh, help me, Dr. Zaius.
Dr. Zaius, Dr. Zaius. Dr. Zaius, Dr. Zaius. Dr. Zaius, Dr. Zaius. Oh, Dr. Zaius.
Dr. Zaius, Dr. Zaius.
What's wrong with me?
I think you're crazy.
Want a second opinion?
You're also lazy.
Dr. Zaius, Dr. Zaius. Dr. Zaius, Dr. Zaius. Dr. Zaius, Dr. Zaius. Oh, Dr. Zaius.
Yeah, that's some good stuff. That was back when the Simpsons were gold.
Yes, they could do no wrong. Of all the films, which was your favorite and why?
You know, I don't know. I don't know which one's my favorite. I really love the first four. I like Beneath. I think Beneath gets a bum rap, kind of like most sequels do. I love it. It's like, that's the end. That's the end of the Planet of the Apes, you know?
It was not uplifting.
Yeah, that's the end of it. It's like, you only get these two movies before it's gone. And then you get all funky and go back to the 70s with the third one. And I like that stuff. Plus you get Ricardo Montalban. He's awesome. But, you know, if I had to choose, I'd say it's the first one. The first one is the best one. But I also really like Conquest.
Did you ever see, there was a television series, it's been in reruns. You probably didn't see it when it came out.
I'm aware of it. I never actually saw any of it. Actually, one of my classmates in the Kubert School was a huge, huge fan of the Apes movies. He was the first one that brought the show to my attention. I had no idea. I knew there was an animated thing.
Yep, there was.
But as far as live action, I had no idea until about 10 years ago that existed.
It only lasted for a season, which is part of the reason why people probably forgot about it. Ron Harper was in it, James Naughton. And James Naughton, you can tell by looking at him, he's the brother of David Naughton, who was in An American Werewolf in London from like 81 or something like that. And he also did a lot of the Dr. Pepper ads. But I liked it. And it also had Roddy McDowell in it, too. He was in the film. It was a little more positive in a way. I felt like the humans and the apes trying to work together more, at least those three characters, Ron, James, and Roddy played. And it has an awesome opening title sequence, I think.
I recently watched that and I was pretty impressed with
pretty
it,
good.
Actually.
Yeah, yeah. And even the fight scenes are decent for a 70s, you know, early 70s. Some good tumbling and throwing and, you know,
sure.
Halfway decent, you know. The only odd thing about it was at the end of every episode, Alan, Pete, and Gallen would go running off through a field. Like they're being chased. Even if they're not being chased, they're still running to wherever they're going next, and they don't know where that is.
That's funny.
But yeah, for me, the best ones, and I only know these because I saw them like in the past year.
Yeah, I know there's a box set that includes the show with it.
That's right. The ones I like best are the ones that go back and look at the past in some way. Like the first episode, they find an old book in a cave, and it had pictures of Earth like, I think like around the 30th century, but that's already ancient history. So it was kind of cool to see that in context of their future. And there's one where Pete's stuck in a San Francisco subway with Urko. And Urko is basically like your Ursus character, just for television.
Yeah. When I was doing a lot of research before actually starting on this, and I kept coming across Urko. I was like, well, who the hell is this? Is this Ursus?
Ursus made for TV. Yeah. Basically what it is, a very angry militant ape. And he gets stuck in the subway with Pete, and they try to get out. But it's kind of cool to see that period of Earth's history that was missing for the guys. And then they had one where they found a recorded message from scientists that what was happening towards the end before the cataclysm happened. Those are the ones that stand out in my mind that I really enjoyed. But like I said, I just saw them probably back in the past year. But moving forward to the 21st century, did you see the Tim Burton reboot in 2001? I saw it in the theater.
I did not see it in the theater. I remember that. I saw it not long after that. I don't know. I don't hate it. It's its own thing. It looked cool. I don't know if Mark Wahlberg was the right fit for that movie, but it's fine. It had a cool soundtrack by Danny Elfman.
I thought it looked cool. I was with it all the way through until the end, and then they threw in a twist at the end, and I was like, what? And I didn't know why. It just was like, let's just do this.
That's the original, or pretty close to the original ending of the book, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, really? I'm ignorant. I didn't even know that.
It's like, it's been years. I remember I read the book, or most of the book. I don't know. But this was back in high school. And I remember it being, it's like, civilization is like our civilization, only with apes now. The movies definitely took a lot of liberties with the source novel. I don't think I knew that at the time, because I think that came out before I'd actually read the original novel. And I remember not really liking that either. I thought that was stupid.
It just seemed really odd and out of place. Even if it was part of the novel, it just seemed tacked on. Like, oh, let's do this. The prequels that they've been doing, now I haven't seen them all. I'm behind. I'm way behind. But I did see the first one, you know, Rise of the Planet of the Apes. I really liked that with John Lithgow in it. I thought that was excellent acting, and the CGI ape, it was really well done.
I think it's one of the few franchises. Well, we'll start franchise with that first one, Rise. This is a reboot franchise, after all. I think it's one of the few franchises that actually gets better as it goes. And because I'm with you, I really like the first one. I remember being pleasantly surprised by it. Have you only seen that first one?
That's it. Yeah, I'm behind. I have only seen the first one.
You should definitely check out the second two. They're very, very, very well done. Very well done.
Well, I'm in the mindset for it now since I'm reading the series, so I might as well, because I'm caught up on everything else.
There's some nice nods to the original stuff, too. I mean, it's not like blatant in-your-face stuff, but if you're a fan of the originals, you'll catch them.
Good. Besides the movies, did you read any of the comics? I mean, prior to the Boom Studios?
No.
No, me neither. I didn't. I wasn't buying or collecting at that time, so I missed all that.
Yeah, that's before my time, too. I don't even know if they were still making Apes comics when I was a kid.
I don't think so. I mean, the last series that I saw, and I think my cousin had a copy, was from Marvel when they were doing, I think they just did the adaptation of the first film. I remember the covers, you know, with Charlton Heston on it, or a Charlton Heston-like looking character. I don't think they could do an exact likeness.
We're still not allowed to. The first script was done before I came on board. So it was written very point by point, you know, very written out. And if you look at the first issue, Taylor's actually in the first couple pages. And he actually ends up popping up again throughout the series. But there were specifically lines saying, we have to show him either from the back or in shadow or in something, as we do not have the rights to his likeness. Hating that. I was so upset. It's like, well, if I'm going to be doing this, I want to be able to draw at least the character, you know? So I remember going back and forth with Daphna about it, and I was like, is there any way I can do it? Maybe make him generic looking? Generic hero? I remember doing a lot of sketches, and they kept coming back with, okay, this is good, but you need to change this. This is good, but you need to change this. I mean, we're talking like direction of hair movement. His hair needs to be parted on this side if we're going to do this, but eventually we got it, and he shows up. I was able to show him not in shadow.
Well, it makes a big difference. That first page, I was like, oh, wow. I was really excited to see that, so I had a way to identify with it. I could be hooked into it faster that way.
I also get a better physique. You know, I made Charlton Heston look real good in this.
Little body sculpting. So the first issue's out. I love that. The second one is coming. How far along are you right now since you got pushed back a little bit with your illness?
I'm finishing the third one right now. I don't know how far behind that actually makes me. Daphne and the editors of Boom keep that stuff pretty close to their chest. They're pretty smart in giving you a bunch of time without telling you, and telling you when they need it without telling you when they really need it. Because artists are lazy. And I apologize to all the other artists, but, I mean, let's face it, guys. We're all lazy.
Is it just like getting pencil to paper and getting started? Or is it like, I have to conceptualize this first before I get started? I just have to kind of get on a roll. Is that what it is?
I don't like getting into that, oh, I'm an artist, you know? But a lot of it does have to do with getting in that right creative mindset and actually putting pencil to paper. Once you actually start doing it, it's easy. It's just a matter of actually sitting down to do it. It can be tough.
Well, let me ask you about this, another property that you've worked on, another book, and we mentioned it earlier, Five Ghosts. And I've had Frank on the show. Is there any chance you're going to be coming back to Five Ghosts in the near future, perhaps?
Oh, we've got plenty of plans. I mean, we've been wanting to for the past year and a half. It just hasn't, our schedules just haven't been matching up. Unfortunately, I think that's going to be the case for a little while yet, but we've got a lot of stuff planned out. We've got a whole fourth arc planned and in the process of being written, and we've got ideas well beyond that as well. Five Ghosts is severely untapped as far as I'm concerned, and if that's the only thing I'm remembered for, I'm fine with that. I'll do that until I die. That's the most fun I've ever had on any book.
Well, it certainly reads like you do, and I really enjoy reading it. For future goals for yourself, is there a property that you want to draw someday? Maybe like the dumb, angry version of the Hulk? Is that something you'd love to do?
You know, I'm not, I mean, I like the Hulk. I'm not as big of a fan of the Hulk as a lot of people, though. It just never hit me. I mean, there are characters on my bucket list. I think everybody wants to do Batman or Superman. Those guys are on my list. Superman specifically. I'd love to do Superman. But really, I don't know. I kind of just want to do my own stuff. I love DC Comics. And there are characters at Marvel that I'd like to do. But if I were to work at one of the big two publishers, it would have to be DC. They've got the characters that I grew up with. I would love to play in that sandbox.
What were the ones that you grew up with? What were the ones that you were reading when you first started reading comics?
The big ones. Batman, Superman. I did read a lot of Spider-Man too. X-Men. I mean, I'm a 90s kid. 80s, 90s kid. So the X-Men were huge around then. Jim Lee's X-Men specifically. I remember The Death of Superman and Nightfall. And those are still two of my favorite. I mean, say what you want about them, but they will always be on the list of my favorite storylines. Those are the ones that got me into it.
Well, they made a big impact. They got a lot of media attention, that's for sure.
I remember in second grade, one of my classmates came in with the first issue of The Death of Superman, and I was just so jealous. And I remember actually taking it from him for the majority of the day, poring over it.
You know, with comics, you do all this wonderful art. Do you ever think you'll write a comic and draw it, your own creation?
I actually have plans to... I mean, that's the goal. That's my ultimate goal, is to do my own stuff. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love collaborating. But I've got stuff that I don't think anybody else would be able to envision the same way as me. Frank and I have a good back and forth, and we decided that he's going to let me take a stab at writing my own little Five Ghosts thing down the road. Nothing huge or world-breaking, but just a little story that I want to tell. I'm really looking forward to that. I've been working on that for the past 6 months to a year.
Well, I look forward to that when you guys get back to Five Ghosts, when your schedules finally align.
Yeah, that'll be nice. That'll be real nice. Sooner rather than later, I think.
Now I just have some questions to ask all my guests. These are just fun questions. No pressure here. What do you like to do for rest and relaxation?
I like to do nothing. I like to sit on my couch, eat like a pig, and watch a bunch of crap. I love doing nothing because it means I've got nothing to do. For recreation, though, I don't know. It depends on the weather. In the winter, I'm kind of a bear. I don't really go out. But in summer, I'm a big fan of tennis. I like playing tennis a lot. That's about it, really. Unfortunately, I don't have a whole lot of time to myself.
Well, if you did have time to yourself, and hypothetically, you're stuck on a deserted island. I say deserted. Is it desert or deserted? I hear both.
I think it's deserted.
Okay. Okay, because, you know, it'd be really tough to survive on a desert island. But deserted island, there's no one around. So it's just you. You're trying to survive. You have one book with you. What would that book be that you'd want to have with you? And it can be paperback. It can be, you know, prose. It could be a comic book. Whatever book you'd want to have with you while you're stuck there.
I mean, I guess the sensible thing would be some form of survival guide. But if we're talking entertainment, I don't know. I'm a big fan of First Blood, the Rambo story. I'm a big fan of that one. That's a good read. I don't think I could pick any one comic.
Yeah, that's tough. It'd have to be like an omnibus or something.
Yeah, or some library. Then that's fine. I don't know. I really don't know. I've got so many to choose from.
When you're resting and relaxing, you're off the island. What is your beverage of choice?
Beverage of choice is probably iced tea with lemon.
It's a good choice. Stay hydrated. I should drink more of that, not so much diet soda during the day. It's a bad habit. Bad habit.
Bad for your teeth, too. More so than regular.
Oh, yeah. Well, the sweeteners and the acid and all. The iced tea is perfect. A little bit of caffeine, you know, some good antioxidants. Put the lemon in there, forget the sugar. Good for your blood sugar level, and it's the best way to go.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not some health out of you. You should see me, man. I'm a disgusting slob. It just so happens that I enjoy this one healthy thing.
Now, my final question. If you were an action figure, if they were going to make an action figure of you, what would be your accessory?
That's good. That's a good one. I don't know. Something that has a spring-loaded shooter, maybe? Like, back in the day, back around Batman Returns era, when they were making all those awesome action figures, there was a Robin figure. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Not the figure, no.
Okay. Well, it was based on, you know, the Tim Drake costume. He was going to be in the movie. They didn't put him in the movie. So they made an action figure out of him. And he had this awesome, like, backpack that shot this grappling hook. It was connected to, what at the time felt like a mile of string. And I thought that was the coolest thing. Because you can make your action figure swing on it, swing around the city and stuff. So I had something like that. Something like that I think would be cool.
Have not had that answer before. A lot of times it's practical, like, you know, their computer, their cell phone, whatever they use the most throughout the day. Much more, you know. But
let's have fun with it.
Well, I'm having fun with Planet of the Apes. I think it's a great series. I'm looking forward to the next issue. I can't wait to get it. And I cannot wait to also see Five Ghosts when you're back working on that with Frank. So, Chris, thank you so much for being on Creator Talks.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. All my stage fright is gone. Thanks a lot for having me.
What do you think? Not bad for Chris's first time. He's a natural. In addition to my podcast, I've been putting out their recommended reading posts. These are not reviews. They're just recommendations. I'm not a reviewer. I'm not going to give it a score on a scale of 1 to 10 or 4 to 5. There are others who are much better at that. I'm just letting you know from my reading pile what I really enjoyed reading in the past couple of weeks. There will not be a recommended reading next week. The reason? There will be a bonus podcast on Monday, and it'll be Black Panther-centric since the movie is being released this week. It's all wrapped up in the can, and it was a great conversation. So, the guest will be Evan Narcisse. He is the writer of Rise of the Black Panther. It's a mini-series looking into the origin, the first years of the Black Panther. It is an excellent series thus far, and it was this week's recommended reading. So please check that out if you haven't already. And if you can find a copy now, I'd suggest you pick one up. Now, I promised this week I'd have details on the contest. I want to keep this as simple as possible, so it's fun and easy. The contest will run until February 28th, 11:59 p.m., the end of the month. All right, up for grabs this month. A copy of Marvel Comics Presents, issue number 23 from July 1989. This issue contains four ongoing stories, one about Cyclops, one about the Falcon, one called Wheels of Wolfpack, and one about the Black Panther. It's written by Don McGregor, penciler Gene Colan, inker Tom Palmer, letterer Joe Rosen, and colorist Glynis Oliver. And hey, the other creators in the book are pretty good too. We have Ron Lim, we have Dave Cockrum, and Ron Wilson, who used to work on Marvel 2-in-1. Condition-wise, I'd say it's near mint, maybe very fine plus at worst. And just to sweeten the pot a bit, I have a copy of Madman, In Your Face 3D Special starring Frankenstein. This is written and drawn by Mike Allred, with colors by Laura Allred. And yes, it is in 3D. Glasses are included. And finally, I'll throw in there a sheet of Creator Talk stickers you can put on your lunchbox, you can put on your backpack, whatever. Now, how does the contest work? Again, I want to keep this simple, so follow me on Twitter. And if you're already a follower, you're included as well. And of course, tag me on the tweet, at Creator Talks Pod, and tell me and everyone else which interview you liked best so far. Just mention the episode number and the guest that was on the show. As I said, I decided to keep it simple, take out all the trivia, simply follow me and tell me which interview was your favorite so far and what episode number it was. I will pick a winner at random on March 1st, and then I will announce that winner on social media, so good luck. Thank you for joining me for Creator Talks this week. The show is available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, YouTube, and also on Amazon Echo and Dot devices. Just say, Alexa, play podcast Creator Talks to hear the latest episode. In addition, you can listen to the show and follow it through Podbean. Your feedback is greatly appreciated, so please rate and review on iTunes if you like the show or an episode that you heard. Your ratings and reviews go a long way to helping the show, and I can't thank you enough for taking a bit of time to do that. For your convenience, in the show notes of each podcast, I have a link to my iTunes page where you can rate and review the show and see the entire list of shows available. If you haven't heard them all, take a look through. There are living legends and up-and-coming comic creators. Tell family and friends who like comics and comic book creators about the show. And to subscribe. The content is free. Just as valued are your comments and feedback. You can reach me through Facebook and Twitter at Creator Talks Pod. That's at Creator Talks Pod. You can also reach out to me by email. You can find that at my website, creatortalks.com. At the website, you will also find blog posts, reviews of books that I have read that you might want to read too, my catalog of podcasts, and videos and other written articles on the website, creatortalks.com. A hearty thank you to all my guests. It is an honor and a privilege for you to make time to be on the show and talk to me about your work. It is your knowledge and insight into the creative process that makes the show so unique. My thanks also goes out to my family who makes this show possible, especially my executive co-producer, Mrs. Calloway. I'll be back each and every Thursday with a new interview. For Creator Talks, I'm your host, Christopher Calloway. Until next time.